Once a man really comes to the intuition of faith, he knows that what Jesus is saying is true, he accepts it as true, he makes the judgment that this really is true, that this is God's world, and I am God's son, God's daughter. From that moment on, he sees everything differently. He touched me, and suddenly nothing seems the same. One of the little side preoccupations of my life is to really live and to really love. I think it's because I have Scotch blood by absorption or something. I want to get the most I can out of living. I want to see the things that are beautiful, and I want to hear the music and the poetry of the world. I want to be able to feel all the emotions, compassion, sadness, joy, ecstasy. I want to be alive. I want to be alive in my mind. I want to be able to think. Aristotle once said, "The unreflected life isn't worth living." I want to think about what's happening, what I'm doing, what people are doing to me, where I've come from, where I'm going. And most of all, it is my hope that I will become very alive in my heart, that I will really love. I will really get out of myself. I will break that terrible fixation, that terrible preoccupation with myself, and really love. Psychologists tell us that the average person achieves only 10% of his potential, and then he dies. 10%! Do you know what that means? That means the average person sees only 10% of the beautiful things that pass before his eyes. He notices only 10% of those intriguing faces that are there before him. He hears only 10% of the joyful sounds, the music and the poetry. He's alive only 10% in his feelings, in his mind, in his heart. And this seems awful to me, to die without having really lived, without having really loved. I want every day, when, in the morning when I pray, I ask God, don't let me die without having really lived, and let me live today. Yesterday is gone, tomorrow hasn't come. Today is my day to live. And I set the dials of my soul to really live today. Not just to exist for another day. Not just to eke out a living for another day. Not just to avoid conflict for another day, but really to live. And then I see the faces of the young people on our campus. 18, 19, 20 years old, walk by me, and they look very sad. And I know that they're going through their midterm exams, or they're trying to write a paper or something, and they have romance problems. This boy doesn't like me, or that girl just broke up with me. But in general, I want to say to them, when I see these constipated looks on their faces, I want to say, oh, come on. Hey, come on. You're only 18 years old. You got your whole life ahead of you. Live. Oh, enjoy. Have you noticed the sun is shining today? Did you see that tree with its leaves changing colors? Did you notice that? Did you notice the face that just passed you? Live, be alive, and love. And I really find it a very sad statistic that the average person achieves only 10% of his potential. I keep saying to myself, where does the other 90% go? And I was looking for a long time for an answer. And I think I found the answer in a book. I'd have to say it's one of the 10 most interesting, stimulating books I've ever read. It's Ernest Becker's The Denial of Death. It won the Pulitzer Award for nonfiction in 1974. Ernest Becker died right after completing the book at age 49. And he answers the question why people are not really alive, why they don't just let go and really live. He says they're afraid. They're afraid to live, and they're afraid to die. Becker says it is these two fears that cripple a man. The fear of life and the fear of death. And I think I found in Becker's book the answer I was always asking, why are people so dead? They're fooling everybody by breathing. They're not really living. They're not really enjoying. They're not really interacting. They're not really sharing. They're not really loving. Only 10%. Why? Becker says they're afraid to. What are they afraid of? He says, there's so much out there that if I let it come in, if I take it in, I am afraid of being overwhelmed. Becker says, if you even just looked at one face, if you just studied one person's face, there's so much there that we're afraid if we take it in, what will I do with it? When people tell you, I love you, you're afraid to take that in. Because if it's true, what will I do? What will I do with your love? What will I do with you? What will it ask of me? So what he says is that we push life back, 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 and we keep it at a distance until it becomes, instead of a big, beautiful picture, it becomes like a postage stamp in the distance. And then we can handle it. We cut ourselves off from the things that we're afraid to handle. And so we say to people who are about to cry, don't cry now. Don't cry. Here, take my hanky. Just don't get excited. It's not worth getting upset over. But what we're really saying is, if you let out your pain, if you start crying, I don't know if I can handle it. I don't know if I could live with your pain. I don't know if I could live with your beauty. So we build little walls, and they're walls of defense both against life and against death. Becker says we keep pushing off the thought of death, that this body someday is going to die. We don't like wakes and funerals because it reminds us. It's always on the periphery of your vision. You're going to die. Oh, you will. You're going to die. And Becker says we all have in us this desire for immortality, and it's a sad thought to know that someday I'm going to die. He asks himself in the book, what is the solution for man? What do you do? You're afraid to live and you're afraid to die. So you manage life, you cut it down to the small little life that you think you can handle. And the less you think you can handle, the smaller you cut down life. You don't make friends because friends are going to ask something of you. Friends are going to mean obligations. Friends are going to mean that you have to be there for them, and they're going to be there for you. So you keep your number of friends very limited to where you can handle it. You keep people's pain and people's pleasures at a distance to where you can handle it. And you don't admit into your mind the thought that I'm going to die. Maybe tomorrow, maybe in a few years, maybe in many years, but I'm going to die. Becker says, if a person is willing to let life come in and willing to face death, he will tremble. But in that moment, faith will be born. In that moment, he will go out of himself and become a believer. That real faith is born through this really profound contact with life and this profound recognition of death. I'm going to live. I'm going to be alive. I'm going to notice you. I'm going to see your pain. I'm going to watch your face. I'm going to watch a leaf fall from the tree and a flower grow from the ground. I'm going to be alive. I'm going to feel tenderness and compassion and so forth. I'm going to do this. I'm going to engage life and let life engage me, and I'm going to admit that I'm mortal. And in that moment, in that terrible fear, the fear of being overwhelmed by life and of being destroyed by death, I will find God. I will go out of myself. The solution, Becker says, isn't to stay inside yourself. It's to go beyond, to transcend yourself. And so I found in Becker's book, The Denial of Death, an answer I had long been seeking. There are three things that constitute a fully alive person. His intrapersonal dynamics, what's going on inside him in relation to himself, his interpersonal relationships, how he gets along with other people. But it's the third part of being fully alive that I want to talk about right now, and that's the frame of reference. When you look out of your eyes, what do you see? Now, what I would like to propose to you and like you to consider, please, is that 95% of all your suffering and unhappiness, 95% of all the things that make you only 10% alive, come from a distorted vision of reality. You're seeing something wrongly. And when you see something wrongly, you're afraid of it. It depresses you. It's discouraging. You've got to see it rightly. If you saw reality rightly, truly, 95% of all the things that shrink you and wither you and constrict you would be gone. We're always talking about telling people what to do, but we really don't talk enough about telling them how to see things as they really are. Today, the terrible fascination people have with wanting to distort their perception of reality by liquor, by pot, by drugs. They don't want really to see it like it is. And they don't. And we don't. And 95% of all of our suffering comes out of the fact that you're looking at something wrongly. Now, what I am suggesting is this, that if you're not happy, if you feel that you're living a very narrow life, you're not really very much alive, you haven't really laughed for a long time, you haven't really felt exhilarated for a long time, you haven't really felt like you were in love for a long time, you're not seeing something rightly. It's traceable ultimately to a distorted vision of reality. Now, you have a certain vision of reality. When you look out at yourself, at other people, at life, you see it a certain way as only you see it. And what I'm saying to you is that the reason you aren't exhilarated is because you're seeing something wrongly. You've distorted it. Let's say you see yourself as being responsible for other people. For a long time, I went through this as a priest. When people came to me, I felt I was responsible for curing them, for healing them, for finding solutions to all their problems. It was the wrong way of looking at it. I'm not responsible for anyone else. I'm not. I want to help them, but they've got to solve their problem. I'll be like a library. You can come and you can consult me. And I'll give you all the information and all the warmth and encouragement I can, but you've got to solve your problem. And the minute I began to see this rightly, all of a sudden a great weight was lifted from me. Almost all unhappiness comes from seeing something wrongly. And there are three areas I would like you to consider. The way you see yourself, the way you see other people, and the way you see life in its purpose. If you distort, and I'm sure that we all do, if you distort anywhere in those visions, it's going to mean you're going to be very unhappy. Let's say, for example, you see yourself as evil because you've committed sin. We've all committed sins, right? That's why they put erasers on pencils. We're all sinners. But you see yourself as evil, you will never enjoy life. The subconscious mind has always got those scales of justice, and they grind slowly but evenly. A person who feels guilty never allows himself to enjoy anything. If he goes out for an evening and everything is fine, he'll come home and he'll find some way to take all the joy out of that evening. It costs too much, or something happened. I lost my pipe. Something will go wrong. Murphy's Law takes over. If you see yourself as evil, if you see yourself as inferior, if everybody you contact, you come in as the underdog, you'll never enjoy life. You'll be a real full-fledged member of the 10% club. How do you see yourself? If you see yourself as really good, as really what you are good. Oh, you've made mistakes, but you're good. If you see yourself as really lovable, then you're going to be alive. You're going to go out to other people and you will expect them to love you because you're convinced you're lovable. Yeah. It's great to be me. And instead of that funeral that goes on in the heart of most people, you'll have a celebration, a party going on in your heart. If you see yourself rightly, how do you see yourself? You know this old idea of humility that has been preached at us for so long, and it's really destructive, that you're supposed to say, I'm a sewer, I'm a sewer, I'm a great big sewer. That's terrible. That's not what you are. It's not what I am. How do you see yourself? How do you see other people? Are they threatening? Are people basically dishonest? In the last analysis, are all people really selfish? What do you think? Do you remember the diary of Anne Frank, the little Jewish girl who was killed by the Nazis? She was being hunted down by the Nazis in her early teens. And she's writing this journal. And in it she writes, I do believe that every man deep in his own heart is good. And I remember reading that. And this poor little girl, who was the victim of so much hatred and prejudice, is saying that I believe that each man deep within his own heart is good. And I wanted to say, oh, Anne Frank, do you really believe that? How do you see other people? If you see other people as really basically very selfish, every man has larceny in his heart and treason in his blood, oh, you're going to be very unhappy. You're going to be very unhappy. You're going to be a real competitor. You're going to be very careful. And the final category of vision that I ask you to consider is, what do you think life is for? What is the purpose of life? Is it to make enough money to feel secure? Is it to have a social security check coming in regularly? What is life for? Can you say in your own heart that life is to be enjoyed? Life is supposed to be a good time. Not in the sense of a fun party, but a really good time. A time to live, and a time to love, and a time to enjoy. You really believe that? Now, what I am saying to you is that 95% of all the things that have made you unhappy, that keep you from living, that keep you from loving, all the pain that's inside you, the ache in your guts, is all the result of a distorted vision of reality. You are seeing something wrongly. If you feel that you're responsible for everybody that comes to you, you'll feel the weight of the world on your shoulders. If you see yourself as an evil person, if you see yourself as unlovable, you'll never be happy. It's in the vision. It's in your basic vision. Jesus said, I have come that you might have life. I want you to be really alive. I want you to have life in all of its fullness. And in the 8th chapter of John's Gospel, he meets a group of Jews, his own fellow men, and he says to them, if you make my word, if you accept my vision as your home, you will be free. You will be truly liberated if you make my word, my vision, yours. And the Jews say to him, as St. John relates in his 8th chapter, hey, wait a minute, we're the sons of Abraham, we're free. And Jesus says, no, you're not free. Until you accept me and my vision, you can't be free. You're not free. Only the truth can make you free. What is the truth? The truth is seeing reality as it is. Then you're free. When you see things as they are, you're free. Jesus said to that woman, you will remember Martha, when Martha and Mary were making dinner for Jesus. Martha was out in the kitchen, and Mary was sitting talking to Jesus. And Martha comes out, and I can see her wiping away the perspiration and saying, would you tell Mary to help me with the dinner? She says, Martha, Martha, you're all upset about many things. One thing is necessary. The person who has this distorted vision is always worried about something. Something's always wrong. Martha, Martha, you're worried about many things. One thing is necessary. If you see the vision of the world, of life, of yourself, as I see it, you will be free. Your problem is with your vision. I have a black evangelist friend, and he said when he was in high school, he really felt touched by Jesus. And so he went into his classroom at school, and he printed on the board, Jesus Christ is the answer. And then he ran out of the classroom, and he let the class fill in, and then he came in near the end of the group, and someone else had written under his statement, Jesus Christ is the answer, yeah, but what was the question? And he said, I remember being taken back by that. I didn't know what to say. Jesus Christ is the answer, but what was the question? And then he said, I began to realize that life questions us. Every day of life questions us. We're always questioning life, Viktor Frankl says, the psychiatrist. Let life question you. The next time something happens, something good, something bad, you know what it's saying to you? It's questioning you. Can you enjoy things? What kind of a capacity for suffering do you have? Have you got guts? Life is always questioning you. You're being questioned right now. Can you listen? Are you capable of listening? Are you capable of opening? Are you capable of loving? How faithful can you be to love? When you say to someone, I love you, how deep are you? Life is always questioning us. But what it's really questioning is our vision. Someone dies. You know what that's asking you? What do you think of death? And Jesus is saying, you won't really be free until you accept my vision, because only the truth can set you free. So what I would like to propose to you, and you can do this, I know, because I've been doing it for a couple of years now, it's helped me enormously, is whenever you feel yourself being constricted, unhappy, ask yourself this question. What am I not seeing rightly? What am I not seeing according to the vision of Jesus, this healing vision of Jesus that liberates? And every day you'll find something new out. You know, I realized that the only time I really got mad, really lost my temper and said vulgar words, was when I was driving. When someone cut me off, when someone got ahead of me, when someone pulled up in that turn lane and shot in ahead of me, and I want to lean on the horn and tell that man, you can't do that. So you say to yourself, and you know, he doesn't even know you're mad. The only person you're really hurting is you. The only person that you're making really unhappy is yourself. And so I say to myself, what am I not seeing rightly? What am I not seeing rightly? And I came to the conclusion, I've got to be honest now, that I see other men, especially in the driving situation, as my competitors. And I see things only from my point of view. Maybe that man is rushing to the hospital or one of his family has been taken. I never think of it from his point of view, but only from mine. I see myself as being too important. But most of all, I have seen myself as being a real competitor. I want to be number one. I want to be Hertz. You can be Avis. I'm not seeing that rightly. Jesus says, oh, those who want the first place will be demoted. Take the last place. Serve other men. Love other men. Try to understand the other person's point of view. Love one another as I have loved you. Now, once you start thinking the right thought, you develop a new attitude. That's how attitudes come to us. We keep thinking a thought. We keep thinking, I'm no good. I failed at this. I'm no good. I failed at that. And finally, it crystallizes in us as an attitude, I'm no good. I'm worthless. But when you practice what I would like to call vision therapy, that's, what am I not seeing rightly? Why am I sad? Why do I go around depressed all the time? What am I not seeing rightly? When you see the thing that you're distorting and you think the right thought, it's the beginning of a new habit, a new way of looking at things, and this is what's going to free you. This is what is what's going to make you happy. We could go on endlessly with examples of how you see distortions. I remember not long ago driving along Eden's, and the car I was driving suddenly died. It just died in mid-flight like a bird. And I managed to get over to the side, onto the shoulder, and the place where I was had in back of me only a big gully and nobody there. On the other side of me, where there were people, there were stores, six lanes of whizzing traffic. And for about 5 minutes, all I could think of was, what do I do? What do I do in this situation? And finally decided to hitchhike. And so I started to hitchhike. And for about 10 minutes, people just went whizzing right by me. And I felt really rejected. You know, don't you care? Don't you see I'm in trouble here? And finally, a young boy, a student at Northwestern, picked me up. And he said, going to take you to a phone, gas station, where? And so I said, I think I better go back to the dealer. And he drove me back to the dealer. And we started to talk, and he said, I'm a marketing major, but my real interest is in theology and psychology. And I started to tell him about vision therapy. And I told him that when this happened to me, I was really panicky. I really felt something inside of me that was just really throbbing. And he said, the boy said to me, and now is the time you have to practice vision therapy, right? Why did I panic? Why was I so thrown? What was I not seeing rightly? And I found about five things. But the main lesson I learned was that I've got to be in control of a situation or I panic. The minute you present me with a situation where I really don't know what to do, what do you do? Do you crawl down that gully? Do you try to run across six lanes of Eden's traffic? What do you do? I like to be really in control. If I walk into a classroom and I know I'm the teacher, I'm utterly confident. And I see that. I see. The way I see a situation, it's only when I'm in control that I'm really at peace. There's so many of life situations where you're not in control. And so you start thinking the right thought. Martha, Martha, you're all worried about many things. Only one thing is necessary. So, each day, life is going to question you. How much can you love? What do you think of yourself? Do you really like other people? What do you think now? Now ask yourself these questions. Let life question you. Stop questioning life. Is today going to be a good day or a bad day? Let life say to you, are you going to be good today or bad? Do you really believe in people? Do you believe in God? Do you believe in the power of prayer? Do you believe in faith? Who are you? And you answer, and when, as you gradually clear up these distortions, each time you do, you start thinking a new thought. If you think you're no good, you better do something about that. That's a distortion. Peter said to Jesus, depart from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. And Jesus says, do you love me? I don't care whether you're sinful or not. I don't care where you've been or what you've done. Do you love me? Do you love me, Peter? How do you feel when you come before God? Now listen to your guts, will you? Don't tell yourself what you should feel. Let your guts tell you what you do feel. What's your reaction? Do you know you're good? Do you believe in yourself? Do you like yourself? If you were another person, would you choose yourself for a friend? I assure you that if you don't like yourself, If you're holding against yourself all the failures and the sins that you've committed, you're not going to be happy at all. You've got to clear up that distortion. Jesus says it's okay to be weak. It is. It's okay. I'm the divine physician. I didn't come for those who were well. I came for those who were sick. Are you sick? I keep saying to Jesus, I'm your man. Hey, I'm your man. I'm sick. I'm weak. I need you. That's what I came for. Jesus is never hard on a sinner. The woman taken in adultery, he says, go home and sin no more. There's no one here to accuse you, neither do I. Peter denies Jesus, and Jesus says, do you love me? It's okay to be weak. The only really wrong thing is to think that you don't need me. Oh, you do. But I understand. Shalom. How do you see others? How do you see life? How do you see your own responsibility? Can you laugh at yourself? Psychologists say that we tend to exaggerate ourselves as though we are the center and everybody else is a spoke going out. And I ask my students, I say, if someone came into this room by mistake right in the middle of class and got halfway in and said, oh my God, I'm in the wrong classroom, what would you do? And they all say, we would probably laugh. What if you did that? If you walked into the wrong classroom and said, oh, I'm in the wrong place, and walked out, could you go out in the corridor and laugh at yourself? Psychologists say, they call it self-objectification. Psychologists say, oh, you're taking yourself, you're seeing yourself too seriously. Or you tend to exaggerate one little thing. Somebody said this to you or did this to you, and it becomes the end-all and the be-all and the end of the world. Oh, no, you're seeing it wrongly. This too shall pass. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and suffers the loss of his own soul? What is life for? To make money? To be famous? To be rich? What are you in this for? How do you see life? Unless you accept me and my vision, you cannot be free. You know, the parable in the New Testament that really haunts me is the one about the man who builds the barns and plants all the extra grain so he can stuff them to come to him for food and he will own them. And he gets everything all set. That's his barns all filled, and he's waiting. All he's got to wait for now is bad times, and he's got everybody. And the angel of death comes to him and taps him on the shoulder and says, thou fool, tonight you die. What are you filling your barns with? What's important to you and what's unimportant? Martha, Martha, every moment, life is asking you a question. If it's an embarrassing situation, life is saying to you, how seriously do you take yourself? Now, you've got a lot of, and I have a lot of, distortions. We are seeing things wrongly. And we can't really be free, and we can't really live until we clear up those distortions. First, we've got to isolate them. Then we've got to start thinking the right thought. If you think you're nobody, you've got to say, no, I am somebody. Oh, I am. I'm a good person. And you've got to really explore the reasons why that's true. Or if you think other people are really selfish, you've got to learn to see them as being hurt. They're not really selfish. They're hurt. They're hurt. And they're afraid. Like you and me. And you've got to be more empathetic towards them, but start thinking the right thought. The thought that Jesus thinks. My black evangelist friend said to me, when I was in high school and I wrote that on the board and the other kid wrote under it, yeah, but what was the question? I didn't know what to respond. But now I know. Jesus Christ is the answer to all questions. To all the questions that life keeps asking. Who are you? What do you think of yourself? Who are other people? What is life for? What is important in life and what is unimportant? I know now Jesus Christ is the answer to all those questions. Unless you accept me and my vision of you, my vision of other people, my vision of the world, you cannot be free. Because only the truth can set you free.